Well, we've been doing this series on the big questions of life, and today we're going to be looking at this question, should I love and trust the people around me? Such a huge question. You try to teach children, stranger danger, you know, be careful who you talk to, those kinds of things, and have to be careful on social media, what you do, posting the names of your children and all those things. So is it stranger danger? Should we be trusting people? Should we be suspicious? What should we do? And it's a really big question when you're trying to sort through all these things in life. We've had lots of big questions that we've addressed so far, like, is there a God? Why am I here? Is the biblical faith really true? And is it awesome? And are humans lost without the Lord and destined for hell, really? Are humans infinitely precious in this world? And today, should I love and trust the people around me? Well, we have mixed messages, right, in our culture. This is great. I consider this to be a very important quote from Camelia Paglia. She is not even a believer, but she says, every person, male and female, needs to be in a protective mode at all times, having alertness to potential danger. The world is full of potential attacks and potential dangers. So she's talking about all of the things that can go wrong. You can't let your guard down. The world is a dangerous place, so be suspicious. Well, what about this? Be trusting. From Henry Drummond a century ago, he said, you will find if you think for a moment that the people who influence you are the people who believe in you. In an atmosphere of suspicion, men shrivel up. But in that atmosphere of trust, they expand and find encouragement. It is a wonderful thing that here and there in this hard, uncharitable world, there should still be a few rare souls who think no evil. This is the great unworldliness. Love thinketh no evil, imputes no motive, sees the bright side, puts the best construction on every action. So be trusting. Which is it then? Be suspicious, be trusting. What do we do? In the movie Secondhand Lions, there's this great speech. The Robert Duvall character says this to the young boy. And here's how the speech goes. Sometimes the things that may or may not be true are the things that man needs to believe in the most. That people are basically good. That honor, courage, and virtue mean everything. That power and money mean nothing. That good always triumphs over evil. And I want you to remember this. That love, true love, never dies. Doesn't matter if it's true or not, you see. A man should believe in those things because those are the things worth believing in. Well, when he gets done making that speech, the 12-year-old kid says, that's a great speech. And it is a great speech. But notice what I have highlighted there in yellow. Whether it's true or not, maybe we need to believe in these things and they're not true. Well, I'm uncomfortable with that. I want to believe in things that are true. I want to know that they're true. I want to be able to feel good about believing them and not just that I'm psyching myself up and playing mind games. He says, people are basically good. Is that true or not true? At the bottom, doesn't matter if it's true or not. Well, it does matter. It does matter. But he says it doesn't matter. But these are things you should believe in. There are certain things you should believe in. That's true. And things that are worth believing in. And that's true. So let's talk about this. Should I love and trust the people around me? Breaking that up into two separate questions. Should I love even the bad people around me? And what does that look like? If I'm going to love the bad people, you know, what does that mean I do? What does that mean I don't do? What are the limits? In part two, should I trust even the bad people around me? Even the bad people, I should trust them? Is that what you're saying? Henry Drummond said, in an atmosphere of suspicion, people shrivel up. So I don't want to be that. I want to trust everybody. I want to trust even the bad people. But what does the right kind of trust even look like if we're talking about bad people? In 1 Corinthians 13, the great love chapter, we have these two outstanding points. In verse 5, love thinks no evil. That's what we're saying. We want to think the best we can possibly think of every person. I don't see you and assume that you're proud, that you're selfish, that you're greedy, that you are trying to hurt me in some way. Oppositely, I assume that you're a person of goodwill, that you're kind, and that you'll be my neighbor, you'll be my friend. See, I'm trying to think well of you when I first meet you. And then as time goes by, you say something that's a little mean to me, a little hurtful, it hurts my feelings. If I love you, I'm going to say, well, he didn't mean that. She didn't mean that. I took that wrong. I'm trying to put everything in the best possible light. That's very, very important. And verse 7 says, and love believes all things. You say, well, you can't be gullible. You just can't believe these things that a person is saying, right? Well, that's true. You can't be gullible, but you should want to believe a person. If a teacher comes up to a parent after school, tells the parent, you know, your son did something really awful today. The parent's first reaction is, oh, I don't want to believe that that's true. I just don't want to believe that. That's good. That means you love a person. Someone says, oh, she's arrogant. And your first impulse should be, no, she's not. I just don't want to believe that that's true. I want to believe in her goodness, believe in his goodness. That's the way it is when you love somebody, right? And so that's very important. But Proverbs 27:12 sounds like Camille Pataglia talking about having your guard up, right? A prudent man foresees the evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished for it. So if you're smart, if you're prudent, you have your guard up. Like Camille Paglia says, you have your guard up. You don't let your guard down. You see the prospects for bad and you brace yourself for it. You hide yourself from it. You make a way to avoid it. And so which is it? Am I going to believe everybody or am I going to see the trouble, have some foresight and run away? Which is it? Well, of course, it's both of those. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 12, that very important verse in the New Testament. May the Lord make you to increase and abound in love. Always more and more love. To increase and abound in love toward one another. And here it is. And toward all people. Toward everybody. You're just going to love everyone. Even the bad people you're going to love. And so we're realizing we have to love everybody. And part of this love has to do with trusting and believing the best in them, so we have a lot to sort through. Here is both the introduction and the conclusion today. Monumental life lesson number one. Humans are not basically good. They're not. But God's work of grace in every human being's heart makes humans sometimes absolutely delightful. And all the time, God's gracious work in every human heart keeps all of us from being tyrannized constantly. So we see, as in the book of Genesis, chapter 6, every imagination of the thoughts of the sons of men is only evil continually. People are capable of such rottenness. So we see that, as Camille Paglia says, we have our guard up. We see it. But also, we see that the Lord is doing a great work of grace in hearts. I was talking to a little girl not too long ago. She's very small, I think 5. And when I was talking to her, she was just so animated. We were talking about whether she had gone to see the new Paw Patrol movie, and she said she hadn't. I said, oh, well, you have to make your dad go take you to see that movie. And her eyes got big, and she's just being so expressive and so animated. And I was looking at her, and I was thinking, that right there is why we love human beings. She is just so cute. That is so sweet. And so that's the work of grace in each human being's heart so that humans can really be delightful sometimes. They sure can. And so we understand this is true. God's grace is holding back the evil. He's making human beings delightful sometimes. And this is true. And it's what you really need to believe to make sense out of this world. And it is also truly worth believing. That part, Robert Duvall got right. If you just adjust it biblically, you really do need to believe in this. Here's the monumental life lesson number two. To love a person, according to the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13, to love a person literally means to look for the good in them and to believe the best about them that you possibly can. That's what it means to love someone. You have not loved someone until you have looked for the good in them and believe the best possible thing about them that you can. And you are trying then to spin everything to their advantage, to their favor, because you love them. That's what we're trying to do. This is what makes civilization possible. And this is what improves civilization. And this is exactly what human beings, Christians, are called on to do. We have to love everybody. And this means you're going to put the best possible spin on everything they say and do. All right. So the question, right? Should I love even the bad people? And what would that look like? All right. So let's try it. In the scripture, we read, you have to love your brother. So 1 John chapter 4, verse 20. If a man says, I love God, and then he hates his brother, well, that guy's a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God, love his brother also. So you have to love your brother. Well, let's grow our circle bigger than our brother. Now we have to love our neighbor. 11 times in Scripture, we are commanded to love our neighbor. So it's not enough that you love your brother, the people who are most like you. Now you have to love your neighbors, and your neighbors can be a little different from you, right? But you're constantly told in Scripture to love your neighbor. Well, how about this one? Not only love your brother and your neighbor, but now you have to love your enemy. Now we're expanding that circle out even farther, right? So these people are against you. They are opposed to you. They contradict you. They might even want to hurt you. And you have to love them. So Matthew 5:44, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. So they curse you and you say, God bless you. I want you to be happy. You want me to be unhappy? I want you to be happy because blessing means happiness. I want you to be happy. And you have to do good to them that hate you. They hate you. And you still do good to them. And that's what it means to love. Not just your brother, not just your neighbor, not just your enemy. But as we said a moment ago, all people everywhere. To increase and abound in love toward one another and just toward everybody. So we have to love even the bad people, even if they are our enemies. And we ask ourselves then, well, what does that look like? If I'm going to love the bad people, what does that look like? Well, it looks like this from 1 Corinthians 13. It's tied together a lot with trust. So if you say, I love you, but I don't want to even be around you. I don't want to trust you in any way. Well, you haven't really loved them yet. Until you want to trust them, you haven't loved them. So again, 1 Corinthians 13, love thinks no evil. I'm not going to assume that you're rotten. Love thinks no evil, and love believes all things. You know, as I sit here and watch your lips move and you're telling me that, I honestly want to believe you because I love you. I do want to believe you. I do. One philosopher still living today had the right idea. He said, don't attribute to malice that which may be explained otherwise. When we're handling babies and the baby is kicking and crying, we almost never once say that baby is out to get me or she's got evil intentions. You know, is there any other reason for that baby to cry except that she hates me? There might be another reason. Say, well, I don't know why that guy treated me that way. I guess he's just rotten. Is there any other explanation? I mean, maybe he doesn't know how to treat people better. Maybe he's having a really bad day. Maybe he just hasn't had the upbringing that you've had and he doesn't know that that's rude. Maybe he just doesn't know. Don't attribute to malice what might be explained by some other explanation. Sheldon Van Auken, in his great book, Severe Mercy, talks about this passionate romance he had with his wife who died when she was just like in her late 30s. It's so sad. But he's talking about how they built that very special romance together. And he said there was only one answer, total trust. So you see, love and trust are always tangled together. So in a marriage relationship, love and trust are tangled together, but so also in every relationship. He said the total answer for this romance was trust. However risky, the trust had to be total. Whatever one of us asked the other to do, it was assumed the asker would weigh all consequences. So in other words, she would not have asked me to do that unless it was important, because she knows I didn't particularly want to do that. But the reason she asked me is because it is important. And my baseline assumption is she wouldn't have even asked me if it wasn't important. You see, we assume the best in people. So he says, this might cause us. Thus, one might wake the other in the night and ask for a cup of water. And the other would peacefully and sleepily fetch it. We, in fact, define courtesy as a cup of water in the night. Well, obviously, nobody wants to be awakened in the middle of the night to go and get a drink of water for somebody else. But why did the person ask me to do it? There must have been a reason. And I don't even know what that reason was. But it doesn't matter. She wouldn't have asked me to do it if she didn't have a good reason. And so she loves me and she wouldn't impose. And I love her and I just believe that she needs it and she needs me to do it in this case. See, that's love. And the love is all tangled together with trust. And that's what makes a wonderful romance. That's what also makes a wonderful relationship, even with your neighbors, your brothers, and your enemies, if it comes to that. So, all right, we're talking about love and trust being tangled together, but Camille Paglia, tell us again. Every person, male and female, needs to be in a protective mode at all times, having alertness to potential danger. The world is full of potential attacks, potential disasters. So you have to have your guard up. So what, am I being suspicious or am I being trusting? Which? And the answer is, well, actually, both. One of the most useful phrases that has come out of the political world in my lifetime is this from a former president who said, trust, but verify. Yes, we want to believe, and we're also going to check it out. Trust, but verify. So here's what we've accomplished so far. We've said, yeah, you have to love even the bad people. And what does that look like? Well, it's going to have a lot to do with trust. So that raises the second question. Should I trust even the bad people? And what does trusting bad people look like? I mean, is it wise? Is it safe? Should I be trusting bad people? And here we're going to talk about smart trust. Smart trust, sincerely wishing to believe the best in people. And again, our Bible verse, love believes all things. You're sitting here telling me something, and I want to believe you. I want to trust you. I want to believe the best about you. See, that's very important. And we're talking here not about believing everything you hear, but wishing to believe the person when he tells you. The great principle in law, innocent until proven guilty, comes from the Bible, from the Old Testament days. Deuteronomy 19:15, one witness shall not rise up against a man. At the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses, the matter will be established. So it's not just he said, she said. It's like, no, actually, several of us heard. And it's not true. Matthew 18:16, if a person will not hear you, you have a grievance, a person will not hear you, then take with you one or two other people, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. Not he said, she said. It's like, no, we know. You're innocent until proven guilty. We're not just going to take one person's word for this. 1 Timothy 5:19, against an elder, do not receive an accusation, but before two or three witnesses. He's innocent until proven guilty. And if somebody just makes an accusation, we need corroboration. You can't just believe one guy and say that the fellow who is accused is lying. We just don't know that. We need more evidence than that. We trust others as far as prudence allows. Here again is our Proverbs 27 text, right? A prudent man, that's a wise man. He's smart. Smart trust. A prudent man foresees the evil. I look ahead and I see this isn't looking good. The people who work with police departments and self-defense, martial arts, they say if you're ever like in a weird situation, you're in a parking garage and you just don't feel good about the situation, that fear should probably be heeded. You should pay attention to that, because there is something happening at an instinctive level to say, yeah, something's not right here. You should listen to that. So a prudent man foresees the evil. I'm in this parking garage. This doesn't have a good feel. A prudent man foresees the evil, and then he hides himself. Like, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to extricate myself from this situation. But a simple person, a person who is not smart, he just blunders straight ahead, and then he gets punished for it. Falls into trouble. So we're not talking about gullibility. We're talking about smart trust. You risk only what can be lost without compromising your true priorities in life. And you have to sort through, you know, what is important to me? So who do we trust? Trust, first and foremost, your neighbor. Somebody, you know, the old saying, I know where you live. That's very valuable. So trust your neighbor, who is an honest, hardworking family man. You know, that used to be a saying back in the old days, and you can do a Google search and find, you know, it occurs in literature. He's an honest, hardworking family man. That's just so important. Because, you know, when you have children, suddenly you don't want to be really rowdy. You get uneasy when you're trying to watch over your children. Like, why are those five young men just hanging around on their front porch all the time, kind of being loud, insulting each other. I'm not comfortable with this. People, when they have families, aren't comfortable with that. So honest, hardworking family man. That's different from somebody who is idle. He's not hardworking. Like, oh, that's a little different. And family man, yeah, he's really not a family man. He's detached from his family. That's a little uncomfortable. And by the way, all of that is centered not just in one man's opinion, right? All of that is very Bible. Because in the Bible, we have this thing called the Protestant Christian work ethic. So hardworking. And we also have the family ethic. And so if you find somebody who is hardworking, work ethic, and a family man, family ethic, it just changes them. So your neighbor, I know where you live. You're not just going to disappear on me. Who's hardworking, family man, trust that guy more than somebody who is idle and detached from family. Also, trust the person who has proven himself to be reliable to many people over a long period of time. The best way, if you had a picture of a boat, a motorboat, going across a river, and you photoshopped the boat out of the picture, you could still see which direction the boat was going because you didn't photoshop the wake of the boat out of the picture. Take the boat away, look at the wake, say, yeah, I know where he's going. Same thing with life. A person who has a wake behind them of being reliable, dependable, not just to people he likes, but even to people he might not like. He's still just a really good guy. And that wake is long. He's been a really good guy for a long time. You can imagine, you can chart the trajectory of that person's life by looking at his wake. That's the best indicator we have for the future. Generally, we risk much on the people who have proven themselves to be reliable. Over and over again, this person has proven to be reliable. We'll trust him with a lot. We risk only a little on a person who hasn't been proven either way. Like, I don't really know you. I'm not going to risk a lot on you. I don't really know. And we risk very, very little on those who have actually proven themselves to be unreliable. So I'm not going to risk much on that guy. So risk varies from one person to another. But without a baseline level of love and trust, and those are hyphenated together, right? Because as 1 Corinthians 13 teaches us, they're tangled together. Without a baseline level of love and trust, civilization won't work. So you might remember this guy. I talk about him from time to time. Mosquito Coast, played by Harrison Ford. He's just fed up with the world. So he goes and he buys a little village all by himself. And he's just going to live there and keep away from everybody because all the world is bad. And he's just sick of it all. He's going to drop out. All right. Well, if you want to drop out, here's what happens. You get no medical care. If you drop out, there's no exchange of ideas to make life easier. No YouTube tutorials. You know, how are you going to do this? Oh, I just drop out. I'm not going to have any internet. I'm not going to have any cooperation. There's no companionship and service to neighbors, which for Christians is everything. Like, the last thing you want to do is go where there are no people to take care of, because the whole reason you're in this world is to love God with everything in you and love your neighbor as yourself, but now you don't have any neighbors. So don't drop out. Be mindful that people and situations are constantly changing. So the person you could not trust yesterday, you might be able to trust tomorrow. Everybody changes. The person you could trust yesterday, you might not be able to trust tomorrow because people change. So you have to constantly be weighing the case-by-case scenarios that present themselves in your life. So, for example, L.L. Bean, in business since 1912, to get people outside, you know, they had outdoor wear, that kind of thing. Their guarantee was like matchless. Our products are guaranteed to give 100% satisfaction in every way. Return anything purchased from us at any time if it proves to be otherwise. We do not want you to have anything from L.L. Bean that is not completely satisfactory. The president said, "Our customers seem to appreciate and respect the integrity of our service guarantee, and they are loyal. They like being trusted." That's the way it was for almost 100 years with that company. But in the year 2018, they put out a letter to our customers from L.L. Bean. It was on their Facebook page. And it said, "Dear customers, increasingly, a small but growing number of customers has been interpreting our guarantee well beyond its original intent. Some view it as a lifetime product replacement program, expecting refunds for heavily worn products used over many years. Others seek refunds for products that have been purchased through third parties, such as yard sales. Based on these experiences, we have updated our policy. Customers will have 1 year after purchasing an item to return it, accompanied by proof of purchase." Well, 1 year is still a very nice guarantee. You know, you could wear a pair of hiking boots for a whole year and turn them back in, and they'll honor that. But it's not the same guarantee they had before, because people were going to yard sales and selling this stuff on the internet, getting new replacements and then selling the new ones on the internet. And they said, "We just can't win." So you see what is happening? Smart Trust. Are we gullible? No. I think they were losing $250 million a year on transactions like that. And that was not sustainable. So are they gullible? No. Smart Trust. I want to believe in our customer. And they did, right? From 1912 until 2018, they did believe in their customers. But then they said, we have to make an adjustment here. The guy who was reliable yesterday is not going to be reliable tomorrow. So we're going to adjust. That's smart trust. I want to believe in our customer. And in a way, they have, right? They still are believing as much as they can. For a whole year, you can return the product as long as you have your receipt. So we're trying to believe. I want to believe. See, that's it. Smart trust. I want to believe. There's such a big difference between risking a few dollars and risking your living, between risking a few minutes and risking a lifetime. You know, smart trust is going to weigh all these factors. When it comes to your car, for example, that's the first or second most expensive thing you own. There's a big difference between putting your car keys in the hands of somebody who has a record of safe driving and who loves you, and putting your car keys in the hands of somebody who has a record for poor driving and doesn't really care if he hurts your stuff. What a big difference. You have to weigh all of these factors. When it comes to romance, all romance is high risk. So high. Because if you make a mistake, you have these soul wounds that can last for all of your life. So when it comes to a romance, you will only trust individuals who have adequately answered all those questions about integrability and dependability. Integrity and dependability. You can't trust your soul, you know, your heart, to just anybody. Romance is so dangerous. Spending and earning choices. I mean, if you get the wrong advice, if you're listening to unreliable people, it could trash your finances for years. So smart trust. There's a big difference between trusting somebody with a few dollars and trusting a person with your living. You have to make good choices. Smart trust. Wisdom seldom calls on us to risk very much on strangers or unreliable people. I mean, you want to believe people, but prudence doesn't let you risk everything on unreliable people, right? Every purchase we make requires some trust. You know, if I buy something from eBay, if I buy something from Target, I'm saying, yeah, you know, they stand behind their stuff. It should be okay. Every intersection you drive through, I'm pretty sure not everybody's going to blow this red light and hit me. So you're trusting people. Life only works if we trust people. Grocery stores, you know, they're not going to sell me rotten food. It should be okay. Utility companies, they are going to give me electricity tomorrow and the next day. We're counting on it. Everything requires trust. And so trust is important for everything we do. And you have to trust people as far as your priorities in life allow. Trust people. Want to believe them. But you don't risk your priorities on unreliable people. Hudson Taylor said, "Hard missionaries are not of much use. They are not like the master. He's never hard. It is better to be trusting and gentle and sympathizing, even if often taken in, rather than sharp and hard." This is true for all Christians, not just missionaries. And Martin Luther said, "We should fear and love God that we may not deceitfully give a false impression of, betray, slander, or defame our neighbor. But defend him, speak well of him, and put the best construction on everything. Henry Drummond again, in an atmosphere of suspicion, men shrivel up. But in that atmosphere of trust, they expand and find encouragement. So resist the temptation to be cynical about the human species. You have to remember that little girl who talks to you about Paw Patrol, and she's so expressive and animated. God is doing a work of grace in her heart. It's why she's just so precious. And so the person who is with you in church today, and the person who is not your neighbor, and the person who is even your enemy, the Lord is doing a work of grace to hold him back from all the meanness that he might do. And you don't want to be cynical about the human race. Love makes us slow to think badly of people and makes us want to wish. I do wish to believe you. Teachability is important. When somebody tells you something, think, all right, he has a side. I'm listening. And even take a hint. Because sometimes when a person doesn't want to hurt the relationship he has with you, he'll just drop a hint. That way you could pick up on it. And nobody has to be dinged up, you know. It doesn't have to put a chill on our relationship. The Jewish rabbis had a saying, who is wise? Oh, the person who learns from everyone. So when you open your mouth, I'm trying to believe you. I'm trying to learn from you. I want to believe you. Don't be cynical. If you're going to be a doomsday prepper, you know, a pox on the world, well, then there's no companionship. And, you know, the greatest of these is love, right? You don't want to do that. And there's no cooperation, and there's no mission of service. I can't tell you about Rosetto again, so here we are back to the conclusion. Monumental lesson in life, number one. It's true, humans are not basically good, but God is doing a work of grace in every human being's heart. And this is what makes human beings sometimes truly delightful. It also keeps human beings from tyrannizing all of us incessantly. That's the work of grace that's happening right now. This is true. And this is what you have to believe in order to make sense out of life. And this is worth believing. Monumental lesson number two. To love a person literally means to look for the good in them, to believe the best about them that you possibly can, and put the best possible spin on everything they say or do. This is what makes civilization possible and what improves it. And it's what we Christians are actually commanded, called to do. So yes, we love everybody. Everybody, even our enemies. And we want to trust everyone as far as we possibly can. That's what it means to do God's work in this world.